Mike and Vianna, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Vianna, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B. My name is Mike Bloom, talking about episode 5 of Survivor Ghost Island. I am joined by an illustrious panel, as always, to break down this episode in our own non-traditional B&B fashion. First, let me welcome back, as per usual, the co-owner of the B&B, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here. I always look forward to sitting down, talking about my favorite show, Survivor.
Perfect. And no tears, please, Liana. It's a very tear-filled episode. We want to keep it nice and happy here.
Completely dry.
Nope. We're keeping that. Nope. our guest for this week, we have yet another returning guest. How could we turn her away at the door when she came in with a sumptuous plate of pastries? And no, Chris, we are keeping the chocolate ones for ourselves. Allie Lasher, welcome back to the B&B.
Thank you so much. This is my favorite weekend getaway. Let's just hope this week it goes better for children than last week.
Yeah, I don't know. The middle school contingency of the Survivor fandom has not spoken out against us, though. I guess I realize that we should probably make a distinction from now on in podcast lore between GOAT and G-O-A-T, because there was some confusion going on there, it seemed.
Yeah, I'm just ready to be bullied by all the middle schoolers. Like, come on, cyberbullying. I don't know the difference between GOAT and G-O-A-T.
Well, Allie, since you've come back here, we all know about your Survivor resume, but I feel like you have a unique experience in that, much like with a lot of these shows that both you cover and watch on reality TV or Hap-Ups, you host a cavalcade of people to talk through this episode and watch these types of shows. So I would love to hear from you. Both, what are you thinking about Ghost Island so far, and what has been the Ghost Island experience with the group of people that you're watching with?
Okay, first of all, I'm loving the fact that this gets set up as like, you're in rare form in the podcast community because you have friends you watch the show with.
It's very rare like form, though.
No, friends is probably generous. So before I answer your question, I haven't had any forum to share this anywhere, and I did not plan to say this, but I would like to let you guys know, I auctioned off for a Michigan Law like charity thing, fundraiser. I auctioned off a reality TV experience where you could pick from a number of shows, but the Survivor thing was watch the show with me and I'll like FaceTime a contestant like Max said he would do it, or Rourke, or could get Mike to do it, whatever. I was like ambiguous Survivor contestant. We'll try to make something happen. Someone paid $81 for it.
Nice.
Damn.
So I'll let you know how that goes.
I'm assuming $81 was because someone bid 80 and they just wanted to like rag on their friend a bit and push it just a little bit over so they get the opportunity to FaceTime with unnamed Survivor contestant.
So maybe $81 doesn't sound like a ton, but it was like one of the highest student things that people bid, because we're all broke as hell. Like, we're law students buying things from other law students. Yeah, there was a fierce bidding war going late into the night until it got clipped at like 12:10.
Wow.
Well, and that makes sense. I mean, you know, especially after all the concubines, you know, you don't have a lot of money left over for the auctions.
Oh, boy. I'm glad you did not miss that, Liana. Well, I'm glad that even though the Survivor auction is broken, the Michigan Law
auction
apparently is not. Right.
Or maybe after they watch it with me, they'll feel like it's broken. This wasn't worth it. But OK, so to answer your question, yeah, I am loving Ghost Island. I think like people are saying this was maybe the worst episode of the season. That said, I still liked the episode. I feel like this is one of the strongest starts. I feel like last week, so this to answer what my friends at the watch party are saying, like we went through and we're just sort of like, there are 8 or 9 people I feel like could win this season. I know I'm no edric person, but just like, I feel like we've had really good deep dives into several really interesting characters that to me, I don't feel like we always get so early on. So I've been really loving this season. A lot of the feedback though from the watch party, because it's a mix of Jonathan Foreman, who's a patron and sometimes guest on my podcast, who's like a Survivor wizard, who was also in Max Dawson's class with me. So it goes, it ranges from him to people who just started watching like last season because I forced them and now they love it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a cult. It's like we pushed you in and now they can't leave.
Got to drink that Kool-Aid.
Right away. Mm-hmm. Or the boxed wine in our watch party's case. And yeah, they're a little confused with how is Ghost Island even different from Exile when we're getting, you know, no game after no game after no game. Or, you know, some things that we haven't really explored yet are like, what are people saying when they get back? How are they explaining? I noticed Kellen like burned her parchment on Ghost Island. That didn't really get a lot of attention. Like there's some gray areas that I think even I hesitate to say super fan, but the regular viewers aren't really understanding. That's hard then to explain to a newer viewer. But overall, I'm loving the season. My boy, Jacob Derwin, got clipped early. And then my next boy, Stephanie, got clipped last week. So I'm struggling with the people I like going home. But in general, I think it's been great. Was that a long enough answer?
Al, you're running out of boys.
Yeah, well, I'm the number one. My number one boy, Paul, I guess, is not in contention, so he'll always be there.
Not yet. Just wait until, you know, I don't know. Kellen did not take the temptation that came on Ghost Island, but maybe the next time somebody does, someone's going to have to come to the game, and it's going to be Paul.
Kellen, go into the den of Ghost Island.
Oh, God, that's such a disaster. I could totally see it happening. No. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's really interesting that you bring up sort of this concept of like, what is Ghost Island? Because I swear to God, every single time now it feels like, oh, I'm sorry, you mean Exile Island? Because, you know, we've really only had one game be played. And I know that Kellen got an opportunity to do so and didn't take it, which I guess it's weird because, again, there's part of me that's like, oh, I should be really happy that we're not being flooded with advantages. But on the other hand, it's like, come on. I'm going to call it Ghost Island. Like, it's got to be Ghost Island. I don't know.
Kellen really screwed up because I think by passing on the game, it disqualifies her from ever being a guest on the B&B. Because, like, you can't pass on a game and then show up at the B&B. Exactly. That would be so boring.
No, we're going to have Paul Osselstyn as the bouncer, as the B&B bouncer. He's going to, like, check her card and be like, oh, I see zero games played on Ghost Island. Sorry. Take that 180. Go the other way. Career counsel yourself out of the B&B.
That's right. That's a one requirement. Must play game on Ghost Island.
Well, what did you guys think about this episode? Because, you know, like Ali said, there's been a disparity of opinions where I think some people, it's a very unconventional episode, which I tweeted about, focusing, I think, more on the probably more somber elements and the more human experiences over the outright strategy. Some people, like Steven, loved it. Some people, like Rob, not so much. Where do you both fall on this episode?
I mean, I think I definitely fall in the probably not so much category. I think when I did my rewatch for this episode, I was really trying to pull, you know, okay, what's happening? What's the content here? And really, it was just like the stories that everybody was telling and then the challenges. And that was pretty much it. And there were some amazing Probst quotes from the challenges. Like, apparently in that first one, you had to pop flags, which I was just all about popping flags. Like, yes, Chris, you pop those flags. Like, Malolo starting to crank. That is a survivor ride right there. So if that's the thing that stands out to me the most, because I guess from my perspective, I wasn't super... I mean, this maybe makes me sound like a horrible person, but, you know, I like the stories that everybody was telling. Like, it's nice to see that humanizing side of them, but like, I would like to see the strategy, please. And I get there wasn't much going on really for them to show. So they sort of have to go this route. But I would say overall, I was probably less high on this episode.
Allie, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so I have to just full disclosure. I'm in love with Stephanie. I want her to be my mom. I want to date her. I want her to be my sister. I want her to be my best friend. Like,
this
she
is a very
is
confused
my...
family tree. You realize that, right?
I'm
this
pretty sure
is
that's
just
illegal.
Like and my friend Liz, who watches with me, like, we love Stephanie. Stephanie Stan. I still don't know what Stan really means, but I'm sure I'm there. And so, like, just feeling like she was going to go home the whole episode kind of put a damper. Like, that to me is my sob story. This was my story to tell. That's how I'll relate to Donathan. But no, and then you're right. I'm not really usually here for, like, the tragedy tales and to have it all so... Like, I love Laurel and... I'm so all over the place. I'm sorry, everyone. Whatever. It's vacation. Donathan and Laurel's alliance that's happening, I love. So I kind of liked that development. I don't know why Chris gets away with doing, and I know it's the wrong thing to do because I do it all the time. When somebody, this like sociology, whatever, when somebody is, oh God, when somebody is saying their tale of woe, you are not supposed to immediately be like, I understand because here's my tale of woe. And that's not supposed to work to develop a relationship. I don't know why that worked for Chris. I was like screaming at my TV, screaming at my television that Chris is just like so bad at human interaction. And I want him to kind of face some consequences for it. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
You're probably streaming on CBS All Access. That's what you were confusing it with.
Yeah. Screaming.
Screaming.
Well, I think we didn't even get to really see the outcome of that. I mean, maybe it didn't work, you know, on Donathan, right? Chris's whole thing. I agree with you, though. The Laurel Donathan connection is the most adorable. And Laurel has such a calming voice. Like, I just want to, next time I'm crying about something, not dry, I really want to call her up and just be like, can you just talk me down? I love you.
But I love that scene because I love Donathan just sort of sitting there nodding along as if he's like interviewing Chris on 60 Minutes or something. Like, yes, please tell me more about that.
It's like Nancy Grace up in here.
Maybe I'm just jumping to conclusions because he has that confessional where he's sort of like, now I'm torn. Like, I like Chris. I don't want to vote him out. I've connected with him. And Laurel does. What am I going to do? I'm the swing. So if this F's Laurel at the end of the day, I'm going to be furious.
Yeah, that's fair.
Just blame the coffee. That's what it's all about, is that connection over coffee. But
Or Dan Foley.
That's what we do on the B&B. But Leon, to go back to the point that you made, I'm actually going to disagree with you. I erred on the side of really enjoying this episode just because 36 seasons in, it's tough for Survivor to surprise us. You know, we've all been watching this show obsessively for the past 18 years. Anything that runs 18 years, no matter how many things you throw in there, especially from a storytelling and an editing perspective, you're like, okay, this person's the obvious boop, and they're going to throw this other person in as the decoy just in case. And while there are still exciting outcomes that come out of that, I feel like as a Survivor community, we do a good job of sniffing that out usually. But what I really liked about it is the true setup that they did of it could be Stephanie, it could be Jenna, it could be Michael. They dedicate specific segments of the Malolo time. The Malolo scene was so intricately told where it was, okay, they start with Jenna and then Jenna flirts with Seabass, which I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about there. Then they come back and they say, okay, let's think about Stephanie. And then there's the Stephanie segment where Stephanie talks to Bradley. They say, okay, now it's the Michael segment. But I loved finding, I mean, it was heartbreaking to find out, especially from Stephanie and Michael's perspective, you know, how much emotional weight they put into the game. I will say it was not fun to watch, but as the great Keith Nail once put, Survivor isn't fun. And I sort of love the fact that we're kind of pulling back the skin in this instance to sort of see in a good way.
I believe it's pulling the curtain back.
Yep, mine's much more visceral.
Better metaphor.
We are skinning this thing alive to see the pure muscle and organs that pump underneath the heart at the heart of the show. But I enjoy at least getting to see. I mean, we get talked up the wazoo about the fact that not only is this cast full of super fans, but this cast is full of people who are at really interesting junctures in their life. I think Kellen and Stephanie sort of represent that to a T with their actual stories, that they're always going to carry a lot of emotional heft to them. And I feel like after 36 seasons, when both we and the show kind of regard players as these are players, these are pieces on a chessboard sometimes, it's nice to occasionally get those times of, oh yeah, they're people. Oh yeah, they actually have emotions. Yes, you know, it was not the most exciting gameplay in the world, but give me opportunities to find out more about the people that we're actually watching on our screens, and I'll be a happy person.
I do also think that when you go, first of all, I miss having regular podcasts with you, Mike, because I forget that if you get pressed on something, you will double and triple down on the grossness of the metaphor, which is awesome. But I do think, like, while I understand the frustration that, like, Rob had of, like, you know, you always want advantages or some hope for this, like, against a pagonging. But in a way, like, for the majority alliance, they're like, there has to be a way for people who are on the side of the numbers and staying with their alliance and managing their strategy well to succeed. Like, I don't like when every move you make gets foiled and you end up like Sareed out of the game. So I was okay with this episode.
Well, one thing that I will say that I did appreciate about the episode is the fact that they didn't try to, you know, somehow subvert the editing in a way that, you know, there was a possibility for one of the three to stay safe, right? Yes. I mean, I think that the fact that it was so blatant about, look, it's going to be one of these three, and then the intrigue comes from which one of the three.
Right.
Yes. So I will say that, yeah, that was really interesting. I mean, it was more from an emotional side. You know, obviously with Michael's whole confessional with him crying and stuff, you know, seeing all of that, you know, like people, oh, Mike, what, you think I care about people? So, you know, that was like less exciting. But yeah, I did appreciate that editing from the show this week.
Yeah, it reminded me of, and we'll move on to the other stuff in a second, but it reminded me a lot of, this is a random poll, but Survivor Thailand, there was an episode where Aaron went home where it was like they were still two tribes but living on the same beach, and Suk Jai lost their second immunity challenge in a row, and the Camp Life segment was just them sort of sitting around and crying about the fact that like they were a tight four, and now one of them, they're gonna have to vote one of them out. You know, they got rid of all the outsiders, they just got rid of Xi'an, and now they're like, crap, we're gonna have to break this family up, we wanted to make it to the merge together but we can't. And it was heartbreaking to watch at the time, and it stood out a bit for just its overwhelming emotional content. So that's sort of the immediate comparison that I drew to it. I feel like it's been a while since we've really seen that type of stuff happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. So sorry, not to change the subject, but another thing that I thought about was just as a follow-up from last week is the fact that both Jeff Probst in his narration and Michael talked about Michael not reversing the curse. So I just want to throw that out there. Apparently he didn't reverse the curse, so I'm just trying to figure out this curse nonsense. So yeah, apparently it was not turned around.
Now we know Jeff Probst's answer to your question last week, so thanks for answering, Jeff.
Thank you.
To hear your answer to this week's question next week.
yeah, this is some weird like Time Lord stuff, right? That's like the whole point.
Yeah, I mean, Josh opened up a portal in first one out to talk to himself. Yep. So it's clear the space-time continuum in Fiji is completely out of whack. Speaking of time, let's take a look back with our time capsule predictions for Allie's mother, sister, lover, Stephanie Johnson. Now, Leon and I have been in step together, like Kellen and Bradley, this entire time. I feel like we're going to go 5 for 5 here, but who knows? We could be wrong. Liana, what did you write about Stephanie Johnson preseason?
Okay, first of all, sorry, Allie, for your girlfriend, mom, aunt, grandma love. I had Stephanie J going pre-jury, and this is what I said about Stephanie. Donathan and his alliance, which includes Stephanie, are running things on Malolo. But unfortunately, Stephanie claimed that it would be okay to drink unboiled water. Dr. Joe is pretty sure she doesn't have a parasite in her brain, although he admits it might be hard to tell, but still recommends she leaves the game due to hashtag severe gastrointestinal distress.
Oh, so you thought she was going to get medevaced?
Apparently, yes.
Wow. Well, and so I guess since you went in order with your season, because I'm always trying to plot how deep were you in the wine bottle? I guess this was early on, presumably.
This is early. Yeah. This is still pretty early. You can tell because I don't go, Stephanie, which plagues pretty much every single entry later on in my writing.
Yeah, and random references to Greek mythology.
Yes.
So, surprise, surprise, I also had Stephanie going pre-jury. Here's what I wrote. Stephanie goes in believing that her running will benefit greatly when it comes to both her mental endurance and the challenges, but her tribe members are more so connected with her running her mouth, as her quirkiness irks some of the more outspoken Malolo members. When they lose an immunity challenge, they bring up her name immediately, aiming down to hammer that tallest nail. Everyone decides to follow, making the writer the author of her own fate. However, she does recommend the name of her 86-year-old swimming mentor to casting. So, Allie, it's your choice here. We were both correct with how she would place, but who had the overall more correct prediction about Stephanie Johnson?
I'm going to declare no winner because neither of you anticipated the week 2 swap. So both of you suck. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I love the way you wrote that, Mike, about running her mouth and running. These are both so ridiculous. I will go with Liana because I enjoy that she was drinking while doing it. How about that?
And that was about to slip $81 into your pocket if you picked me.
Oh my god, that's fantastic. I totally thought Mike was gonna win that. I will take
so
that
did
and
I.
That's the end of that segment. That's over.
Well, I loved Liana, you actually had some really interesting irony in there talking about, you know, Steffi drinking unboiled water, considering that she talked in both my interview and in a bunch of her interviews as well about her and Jenna, you know, sort of ruminating over the idea of possibly poisoning Bradley to send him out of the game.
Oh wait, see? I actually have to change my answer. I'm sorry. Because at least Mike did say that she would be voted out and not medevac. So that's we got to go with Mike.
I'll take the pity point.
Allowed.
That's not pity. That's not pity. That's you were more accurate.
All right. I gotta get on the board somehow. We tied in that one case, but that's been pretty much it. So I will accept it for Steffi Johnson, who we were all extremely sad to go. And I had a great time getting to talk with her as well. I'm saddened. She talked to me, I think a couple other people as well. If you listen to her interview with Rob, it's clear that maybe some of her stuff with Jenna made the cutting room floor because they are very vulgar and outspoken. So, you know, it's happened before. I mean, they bleeped out Sandra so many times, but maybe the FCC just didn't want to pay like the FCC budget to air all their conversations.
Yeah, they're like, okay, look, we can't afford that. We're in our 36th season. All right, we don't have the money for that these days.
We spent all the money on the booming Ghost Island voice.
That's right.
You know what I loved on the interview with Rob is that she never, like, when she dropped an F-bomb, she wasn't like, ooh, sorry, like, can I curse in here? Yeah. She was just, like, letting them fly. I love that.
She's a badass in so many ways. Absolutely love it. All right, let's move on here. As per usual, we're each bringing in a question about the episode or Survivor in general to ask the panel this week. Allie, as the guest, what is your question to us?
Okay, I don't know if this is going to make sense. It's very appropriate for Liana because it's very Jeff Schroeder.
You were just making up so many words today.
I am so bad. Okay. Would you rather go out, get voted out for being unliked on your tribe? This is not a good impression. This is like the voice from Saw or something. Or be loved, but go out because luck wasn't on your side.
Sorry, I can't get over the Jeff Schroeder impression. Which, congratulations, they're having another kid. Okay, what was the question? I wasn't even listening.
Right, so the question is, I was just thinking about this with Stephanie. Like, I feel like the Malolo, I don't know if they were original Malolo, I forget the tribes, but the Jenna, Michael, Brendan, Stephanie have just gotten so unlucky, and that's like a big part of Survivor. Luck is an important part of Survivor. So, like, would you rather be... And maybe she's not as loved to everyone because I loved her so much. I thought, would I rather be loved by the community and my tribe, but get voted out because luck is not on my side early, or get voted out or like stay, but be like the question I asked didn't make any sense. Sorry. Stay. I got too distracted by my own impression. Stay, but be like super unliked, like a Bradley.
I thought you were distracted. I thought you were distracted by a mosquito buzzing around you. I don't know what your relationship is like with them.
So it's really like, would you rather be loved and lose or win and be hated? But it's more like the crushing, not only lose, but go out in an unmemorable position and with no hope of coming back, which I feel like the early players on the tribe are destined for.
I feel like if I'm going to win, of course, I would rather be hated. But if I'm going to go out like eighth, and be hated versus third and be loved, I think I'd probably rather go out third and be loved.
I don't know, because I can understand that. I mean, there is sort of like the idea in the back of your head of like, I could be the next Kelly Wentworth, you know, the one who gets unlucky, who gets swap effed because I'm not a Stephanie and I won't swear here. And then, you know, come back for another season and completely blow them away. But I do feel like, and there's definitely exceptions, but I feel like the majority of the Survivor community, it's sort of like a time heals all wounds thing. Where we're sort of like, you know, we're all as a community raising our pitchforks against a person like, oh, thank God this person left. And then like 6 months later, we're like, yes, goddess, come, you know, talk about this season. You know, even look at someone like Figgy, who, you know, not everyone loves, but, you know, everyone. I was at the live know-it-alls when everyone cheered and gave a standing ovation to Adam Klein for voting her out. And then a year and a half later, she comes onto the podcast and people are like, oh, yeah, that was good. I enjoyed having Figgy on there. So I feel like if you have the assumption that eventually that sort of negativity will null, maybe you want to go with the latter option.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good point, because then, you know, at least you have some more episodes to sort of show what you're worth. I mean, I think definitely in the immediate, though, it would feel much better to be loved. But I don't know. I mean, I think again, it depends on your question, Allie, of like how far I would be able to make it. Like, if I have really good luck, but I'm hated, but I can make it to Final Five, I would probably pick that.
Guys, I'm mortified because for a second time, I misread my own question.
That's very Jeff, big Jeff of you to do that. So
while those were great answers, and I'm happy I asked that question.
Oh,
what I meant. I'm so sorry. I should have just led with it. But the question I intended to ask, which is why I effed it up so bad in the beginning, is like, to me, there's something terrible about getting voted out, not because people didn't want to work with you and not because like you were bad at the game or you made a mistake, but because you were unlucky. So I was saying, like, I meant to ask, and now this is a shitty question. I'm sorry. This is like my first podcast ever, apparently. Is like, would you rather be voted out because like you made a mistake and at least like you could live with that? Or be liked, and like, so your personality is validated, but you were unlucky, so you had to go.
Okay, so we actually auctioned off this spot on the B&B, and Allie won for $81. Congratulations, this is your first podcast ever. So wait, so the question is, would I rather make a mistake or be loved?
No, it's let's just move on. You answered a question already. Okay. Somebody who knows what I'm talking about.
The answer is yes.
Yes, the answer is yes. No, I understand what you're asking. You're essentially saying, like, would you rather be liked but get voted out, like, beyond your own control? Or sort of, like, no, you went home because of a mistake, you know?
And yes, I guess that comes down
to, like, how much does control have an impact on your life? You know, do you say, like, oh, the survivor gods, they screwed me over, but at least people liked me on the way out? That's a really tough question.
Oh my God, what? It's a tough question. I mean, I know, like, Mike, you and I have spoken to the survivor devil, but I would leave it up to the survivor gods. I would rather be voted out because of that, not because I made a mistake. Like, that's embarrassing.
I feel like, to me, it's not, and maybe not even a mistake, or like you barked up the wrong tree, or you made a strategic move and then that person turned on you. Like, I, to me, feel like there's no closure on the survivor experience when there was nothing you could do and you went, you got a parchment that said no game and you were sent there and you come back and like, yep, you're voted out. So I feel like I would rather be like the orchestrator of my own fate and just play hard. And if it screws me, it screws me. At least I like did what I could. Whereas I feel like in Stephanie's exit interview, she sort of just like add that to my list of unlucky things that happened.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I mean, cause then at least, you know, there's sort of, it makes sense. You sort of have this reason versus just like, why was I so unlucky? But nope, I stick with my answer.
All right, so who would you rather lead your Passover set?
You're really last week's questions, Allie. Just, I'll just throw all the questions. Let's play 20 questions with Allie Lasher, but you're asking all the questions.
I'm just embarrassed that I brought such a terrible question to the table and botched it three times before actually getting it out.
Welcome to the B&B.
All right, well, let's get into our first little segment here. Now, this is a segment I would like to call Snap or Crap. Now, one thing, it was, again, a very moist night, as Liana was talking about Wednesday night, but we did get a bit of interesting stuff, you know, amongst our Navidi tribe members, specifically Chris. You know, we had heard about his freestyle rapping on First One Out. He decides to drop some rhymes, you know, right after winning the reward challenge, right after he tosses that rock and, you know, gets desserts for everybody. But he is not the first person to give some poetic stanzas in the Survivor game. So here's what's going to happen. We'll start off with Chris, but I'm going to be playing various poetic, I don't know, phrases that previous Survivor contestants have said during their time in the game. We are each going to put on our B&B berets and judge them for their poetic value. So you can give it either a snap, like a nice little hipster beatnik snap, or we say it's crap. Allie, are you prepared to play Snap or Crap with us?
I kind of wish this was called Cinnamon Rolls or Back Rolls, but I'll go with Snap or Crap.
That just reminded me, oh my gosh, that's so beautiful, from that challenge, the reward challenge, where Donathan is just yelling, cinnamon rolls, cinnamon rolls. I have that in my notes, just in all caps, because it was a beautiful moment. I actually need a GIF of that. So if somebody out there has a GIF, please send that to me.
Dalton Ross included it in his recap.
Right, yeah, I love that. I also love that I tweeted about this, but I loved Chris amped up yelling, we got them, give me these pastries. Like,
I want those pastries.
The weirdest thing to yell while completely aggro. Definitely in the top 10 there.
But yeah, I'm ready for Stamp.
Well, speaking of Chris, let's start with him here. So this is Chris's series of rhymes that he drops in the thrill of winning the reward challenge.
I'm like a diamond in the rough. Do you see me glow? This ain't pay-per-view. It's a free show. I'm still shooting them all day. Free throw. Mic drop.
I love it because I love that sound effect afterwards. Maybe this is just conditioning from RuPaul's Drag Race, but the like, do-do-do-do-do. It's like, that's the awkward sound.
So, Allie, are you going to snap or crap Chris's diamond in the rough rhyme here?
I don't know. What do you guys think I'm going to do? Obviously, it's crap. I don't know. I just want to know, is he saying this isn't pay-per-view? It's a free show or a pre-show?
It's a free show. It's not pay-per-view.
It's not a pay-per-view. It's the pre-show. You don't need to
play it again. Play it again. Play it again.
All right. Let's do this one more time.
I'm like a diamond in the rough. Do you see me glow? This ain't pay-per-view. It's a free show. I'm still shooting them all day. Oh. Free throw.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Horrible.
Can you rhyme? Because can you rhyme free show with free throw? That's like allowed, right? Because it's not the same word exactly. Because I hate it when people rhyme the same word.
It's also a little bit of confusion with the sports metaphors, considering that, you know, he talked up his ace baseball skills that really made him kick a lot of butt during that little, like, weird fan on a spring part of the end of the challenge. But now he's talking about free throws and basketball. As someone who does not associate themselves with sports, I was very confused about that.
Throwing rocks is what he should have done.
The other reason I feel like it's a definite crap is because, like, I hate when somebody pretends a freestyle is like a freestyle, whereas, you know, this is there's no context of what's going on, that this is like he just made it up on the spot. Like, you know, this is one of the rhymes he has in his like Mead marble notebook, and he comes out like, oh, let me just like spit something. All right. And accesses this.
That does kind of make me a little disappointed if it was in his like Rolodex of really crappy like rhymes. But for me, it sort of crosses the barrier of like, it's so bad, it's good, especially the mic drop bit at the end. I don't know why, but it really makes me laugh. So I'm going to give this one a snap.
I'm assuming it's just because you had the image of me dropping that made you laugh so much.
That's right. Just dropping mic.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna snap this one as well, because like Liana said, it's so chintzy. You know, it's only three lines long. I don't think it overstays its welcome. It's a pre-show. It's not the actual show. And I feel like it's kind of goofy that it's kind of endearing. So I'm gonna snap it as well.
But yeah, it's endearing.
I wanna know though, like, it's so crap that you like it, so you snap it. Thank God I'm here, guys, because this would have been a real disaster otherwise. Somebody has to say that this is crap.
Irony is sort of my thing, so, because I'm like a diamond in the rough. I don't know if you can see me glow, but
That's why we don't do video podcasts. That's why
definite back rolls. Definite back rolls on Chris.
Back rolls.
Yeah, let's give it. We'll give it back. We'll give it a cinnamon roll or a back roll. I'll give it a cinnamon roll since you technically won the cinnamon rolls and Donathan was happy about it. All right, let's move on to our next tier. Let's go into the recesses of Survivor history. So, Coach Benjamin Wade, on his first time in Survivor Token Sheens, you know, he had a long, hard day. He went to exile. He took the monastic approach. He twisted his back in the immunity challenge. But he was going to go out with a nice ode, I suppose, to honor and his love for the game. Listen to Coach's poem and see if we can snap or crap it.
With friend and foe, we march to the battle plane. Some to seek success, others to seek fame. We play with honor for the love of this game. And with armor or without, we will toil in vain. So that someday, someone, somewhere will remember our name.
That's actually left on Dr. Seuss's cutting room floor. It didn't make it into Redfish, Bluefish. It was pretty close, though.
I don't want to know what direction Redfish, Bluefish was going to go into. If it's talking about going onto the battlefield.
It's much more brutal. Not really a children's book.
All right, Allie, what are you giving this? Snap or crap, Coach's last stand here?
I'm going to give it crap because... I love how Coach, especially like OG Coach, is like pretending as though he's not there seeking fame. This is the same Coach who like released and starred in his own movie, right? Like what a valiant, noble beast who's above it and just playing for the love of the game. That's crap.
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because you think of this like his poem that he writes. And so it's just sort of part of iconic Survivor for me. But now actually going back and re-listening to it, it's like, ooh, maybe this does fall in the crap category for me.
Well, it's tough because I feel like it's tough to just listen to it because there's this fantastic visual. I don't know if people remember this, but as soon as Coach goes into his poem, the entire jury, which is Brendan, Sierra, Tyson, and Debbie, they all just sort of facepalm and they all put their head in their hands and they're just like, oh god, this is going to go on for another 45 minutes. Luckily, it only lasts about 45 seconds, but they're clearly over it as well, which I think is just the theme of Survivor token chains in general, is like, hey, isn't Coach crazy? So I feel like it, without the visual, though, it kind of takes away from the overall poem.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Especially because you get to see that just immediate, like, oh God, what is he doing reaction, which is just really needs to go with the audio of this poem.
Yeah. Well, that being said, though, I do agree that if you just take the audio and the poetry, it's not actually that bombastic. Maybe I'll disagree with Allie a bit here that I don't necessarily think it's very coachy that much because it's not so much talking about how great he is. So therefore, I might actually give it a crap because I wanted it to be more coachy. I wanted it to be an epic poem about the time he, you know, went down the Amazon River and almost got his butthole eaten.
Right. Not enough battlefields for you, Mike, is what you're saying.
Yeah. One mention of the battle plane and that's it. Come on, Coach. Know your territory.
Yeah. Like go all out. Go full Red Wedding with this nonsense. You know, like, I can see that. I can see that logic.
And then the knife tore across Steven's neck and then plunged into Tosh.
Exactly.
That's what I would do if I knew I was getting voted out. And Coach didn't necessarily know he was getting voted out, but if I knew I was going to get voted out, if I was like Stephanie Johnson, I would filibuster and go into like this epic odyssey of a poem about each and every person who's ever played Survivor to just try to keep myself on there for as long as possible.
That's actually a really good point. If you at Tribal Council, can you just continue to filibuster, or does Jeff Probst have the ultimate authority to just be like, you know what, like, Mike, sit down, shut up, like, we're voting? Or can you just continue?
Like, Allie, you're like our legal counsel here. What do you think?
Yeah.
I am not admitted to practice law. I am not able to give legal counsel. I disclaim all. I don't
in
know.
In Fiji, though.
To be fair, our current counsel is Troy Zan, so anything would be a step up.
I decline to give any legal advice on the podcast, fictitious or otherwise.
When your lawyer pleads the fifth, you know that's not a good sign.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm going to need you to go take the bar in Fiji so we can really settle this once and for all.
Perfect.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on here. The queen, Sandra Diaz-Twine, I don't know if this is intentional or not, but she once let a rhyme loose. This is a short one, but a good one from Survivor Pearl Islands.
I have yet to see him wash a dish or even clean a fish.
That is Dr. Seuss. That's how you do it.
There we go. That we're getting closer to the actual source material. Allie, snap or crap, Sandra here?
That's a full-blown snap for me because, look, it's simple. It's to the point. It's elegant. It's great. I love it. Snap.
Yep. I snap it too. I completely agree. It's classic. It's exactly. And I believe it was unintentional, which just makes it so much better.
And you know, if you do skip the dishes, you don't even need to wash a dish or clean a fish. It takes care of that all for you.
That's true. That's why, you know, only buy paper plates. Global warming's not a thing.
Exactly. Now we're getting preachy here on the BNB. Yeah, easy snap. I mean, I love the fact that it's unintentional too. Chris and Coach both brought in poems. Sandra, I think, completely unintentionally decided to rhyme dish with fish, even though it's such a weird phrasing to wash a dish or clean a fish. Though it's also noteworthy that you think, like, wash the dishes. Who outside of Ronnie talks about dishes on Survivor? But remember that they had to go into the Panamanian village to start, and Drake got a very nice haul. So I'm assuming that they did actually have a lot of plateware around that they had to wash daily.
Yes. Yeah. And I also appreciate it because it's Sandra, somebody who we just talked about, you know, getting blurred and bleeped so many times. And then her rhyme involves like fishes and dishes. It's not, you know, it's nothing. Rick is like, I think there are so many more vulgar raps she could have come up with. But no, it was great. It was very anti-Sandra, which almost somehow makes it perfect.
As I say, not to get too deep into my personal life, I also really like it because in first grade, I had a spelling test and one of the words was fish. And I didn't know how to spell it, but I did know that on the calendar in the classroom for the birthdays for the month, it said make a wish. And I knew that that rhymed. So I asked to go to the bathroom, peeped how to spell wish on the side, and just added an F when I got back.
So it was F-W-I-S-H is how you spell
F-wish.
It then. F-wish.
No, I took the W out. I took the W out. Okay.
That'll be the next, was it Future Week in Survivor History with Jordan Kalish? That'll be his next thing.
Oh, that totally makes sense with the time continuum nonsense that we're seeing in Fiji.
Yeah. All like, right,
Jordan,
get
out there.
Your next question. In Survivor 39, Bill will take the Super Idol.
Exactly. Yes. The future week in Survivor history. It's perfect.
All right. So mutual snaps for Sandra. Let's move on to our next one here. This is a really fun one. Semhar, the first boot from Survivor South Pacific. Now, she is a beat poet by nature. So this really is a five-hole category for her. She's placed on Redemption Island to face off against the formidable Christine Shields Markowski in the first duel. But before she does that, she decides to give herself a little reading to pump herself up. And this is what she does.
There isn't anything that I wouldn't do for this man. I would even take off my clothes and give him a private show to the tunes of his soul because he's all that I need and more. I would give birth to 10 of his children without using any drugs to help ease the pain. And then I would give him one more just because our love is that insane.
There is not one thing that I would not do for my lover, my best friend, my honey, my boo. I can't wait to meet him. All right, I'm good.
All right, I'm good.
Presented without further comment.
Yeah, this is there's a lot to unpack in this one, not to strip off, and not just because you love the person so much that you would do a private show for them, but to the tunes of his soul, because that's all I need. Yeah, there's a whole story in this one, guys.
She's going to birth 10 kids without an epidural?
No, 11. Like, 11. Remember, she said she'd give 11? One. She'd even give one more because their love is that insane.
Wow, that insane. Yes, well, that is pretty insane. I mean, good for you, girl. You go for it. But my goodness.
Allie, do we know who the subject of this poem is?
It might be Stephanie.
Because, yeah, she's going to meet. I'm excited to meet you, right? So, and, you know, obviously the whole time continuum thing hadn't happened yet because that happened with Josh Whittler. Yeah. So
I would give birth to 10 of her children, 2 down, 8 to go.
Yeah. 2 down, 8 to go. I'm sorry, you mean 9 to go because.
All know, right. I forgot about 11. that one extra. All right. Allie, what are you thinking about this? Snap or crap, Semhar's love poem to a man she's never met.
I'm shook. I'm going to give it a snap because I'm afraid.
What, like Semhar is going to listen to this and come after you?
Just, I don't know. I don't know. The spirit, I feel like the energy, like the vibe was so strong that it would be useless to push against it and give it a crap.
That's going to go on Ghost Island too. Semhar poem. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of agree with Allie. I'm also a little terrified by this. Snaps all around.
Yeah, I mean, you can't let fear control you. But I mean, I kind of have to give it a snap as well, just because I talked about how much I love when Survivor surprises me. I don't think ever before have we had someone pump themselves up for a challenge, but talking about how I love this person so much that I'm going to strip for them and have 11 children for them without any sort of pain medication. And that's sort of a rousing anthem to get them ready to go. Suffice it to say, not the best anthem considering Semhar loses this, but I commend her nevertheless.
Is that how you pump yourself up in the morning, Mike? You're like, okay, I'm going to listen to this. And I get pumped for the day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is my most played song on my, you know, on my phone by far.
Yeah, makes sense.
It is the best part of the poem is at the end where she's like, all right, now I'm ready.
Yeah. All right, I'm ready.
No, I think my favorite part might be she goes through this whole thing and you think it's like, okay, this is someone who she clearly knows in her life that ends with, I can't wait to meet him. What?
I can't wait to meet him too.
All right. Well, let's move on here. Some survivors like to get poetic in their final words. Tarzan from Survivor One World is someone who is very eclectic, to say the least. And I talked about this in my podcast with Rob of Famous Last Words, but it applies very much here. Here's Tarzan's final words after getting voted out of Survivor One World.
To win Survivor is the goal. If $1 million lifts your soul, you must outwit, outplay, outlast, or be a savage, soon outcast. Expect there'll be so much deceit, people will lie and they will cheat. And I'm going to add one other thing.
This is such a stupid segment idea. I love it. Yes. Okay. So first of all, I'm really sad that he didn't say molecular substrate of the island in his final words. But the fact that he ends with the Tarzan call, I mean, I have to give this snaps. I love it.
Are you going to give it a Tarzan yell? Let it be noted, Liana is to Tarzan as Ali Lasher is to Big Jeff in terms of impressions.
That's about right.
That was more closer to an impression of me, like when I'm actually on a zip line, like just screaming for my life, than it was like a competent Tarzan call.
How many times have you been on a zip line?
Many times, reluctantly.
Every single time you yell like Liana's impression of Tarzan.
Pretty much.
Is that what they bid at these other Michigan law auctions? Like, you could have a FaceTime with an unknown survivor. You could zip line 30 times.
They have a professor's auction off, like, big experiences like that. Like, there's a professor who will take you on a trip to hell. You go to Hell, Michigan. You go to a biker bar. You go shooting. So it's not that far off, actually.
That's
so
awesome.
There, Mike. Take that.
Wait, hey, do you have to be a student to bid on these auctions?
I think so.
Okay. Never mind.
I can just imagine you, like, breezing it, being like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, just let me like, doctor up a Michigan ID. I'll be all right.
All right. Well, Allie, are you going to snap or crap Tarzan's final words in the game here?
I'm going to snap it, mostly because I love when an older person says bucks. That was, like, really the highlight for me. I know that's
like... just a weird thing to lift your soul, but I won't judge it.
Well, then don't say it's weird and then say you're not judging it. That's like, no offense, but I'm going to say something offensive. You judge me and then we're like, but I'm not judging.
Oh, bless your heart.
That's it. That's my justification for giving it a snap.
Would you give it a double snap if you said $1 million?
No, I like bucks because, you know, it's like slang. He's like, I'm with it.
This is the person who's like, I don't really know what Stan means, but I'm pretty sure I'm there.
But man, I love that. I love bucks.
All my slang is from the 80s. It's fine.
Don't at me. It's my new mantra from the Challenge podcast. I'm bringing it here. I don't care about your complaints. I'll tell you that in advance.
All right, Liana, what about you? Snap or crap Tarzan here?
Oh, yeah. Snap. Totally snap. I'm all about this. I love it. I think it's hilarious. It's silly. It's stupid. It's in the final words, which is also, you know, the camera's on you. You know that this is going to get, well, I don't know. I mean, there's the assumption that's going to get aired, whether or not Tarzan knew that. I don't know. But it was lovely. I definitely snap it.
I'll dock it a couple points. You know, he says, expect there'll be so much to see. People will lie and they will cheat. Not exactly a perfect rhyme there, but again.
Slant rhyme is legitimate rhyme.
He's going all Emily Dickinson here. Actually, I would not be surprised if Tarzan was a fan of Emily Dickinson. But, I mean, I do love him. Also, perfect branding for him to put in outwit, outplay, and outlast into his final words. So, I mean, it's a perfect Tarzan, you know, final words. As Liana said, he unfortunately did not mention the games afoot or, you know, molecular substrates or quantum, quantum entanglements or anything like that. But very Tarzan to be, I think, the only survivor so far to go out with a poem.
Can I ask a question? Do you think that he intended this, that if he made the finals, that this was going to be part of his, like, plea to the jury? Because otherwise it's, like, pretty sad to be like, okay, when I get voted out, I'm going to practice this poem.
Oh, you think that he had the poem already written and he was going to use it as part of his like final jury plea?
I think it was like an either or kind of deal, or maybe not. Am I just making things up?
I don't think he planned that far in advance, if I'm being honest. I bet he came up with it as he's like walking to the, you know, where they do the interviews.
Oh, I feel like this is a long time spent on this beauteous poem.
Well, then it should be better.
Well, you think he's just like muttering to himself, like on the, I mean, to be honest, he was probably muttering a lot to himself on the beaches anyway, but it turns out he was just practicing his poem the entire time.
That makes sense.
What a weird final tropical concert would be if you like, you have Tarzan doing this poem, if you have Chelsea being like, I'd like to stand, God only knows what Christina Cha would be doing, she probably has to give up her spot right there, right then. It would be an odd end to an odd season.
Yes, that would be the quintessential like B&B final tribal of just complete chaos.
You have so much free time while you're boiling your underwear. You think like he would have thought about this.
Oh, that's good point.
Yeah. Dirt or crap will be the next Tarzan based segment we'll do on the B&B. Well, I do have one final poem for you here. And this is actually a really fun treat. Not a lot of people may know this, but one of the contestants from the very early seasons of Survivor, even earlier than Sandra, he didn't do any poems on the show, but I actually grabbed this offline. So BB Anderson, may he rest in peace, was the second boot from Survivor Borneo. It turns out that back in the day, years before going on to Survivor, he actually was a bit of a poet. So I actually dug up one of his old poems, and let's see if I can play this and see if we can hear the musings of BB Anderson. Yeah, I'm Pussy Beach. Ooh la 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 la. See boom, see boom. Don't go, don't go, la la la. You can take my snatch, drag it up, wind it up, give me more, bring it to the ball.
Cameroon.
Oh man, I mean, it looks like it looks like I got my notes wrong. I'm so embarrassed. This was not BB Anderson. This was BB Zahara Benet from RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 3. Of course, I'm so sorry to get this drag race mixed in with this Survivor, but I guess we have to snap or crap it, right, guys?
How dare you, Mike?
C'est bon.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So this is definitely a crossover episode. So this is some poetry that was laid down by the beautiful BB Zahara Benet on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 3 this season. And since Mike has now messed up on purpose, Mike, we now have to snap or crap it. So I obviously give this one a snap.
I mean, in the context of like how much I just enjoyed it just now or how ridiculous I thought it was on the show. Like, I thought it was a big old crap for the show that she was like, this is in terms of the actual, for any RuPaul's Drag Race watchers. I like thought this episode was one of the turning points when BB was getting applauded for when she shouldn't have been just because Ru thinks she's hilarious. So that's a crap for me, but I enjoyed it more than any of the poetry you've just played today. So it's a snap in the context of this.
What a low bar.
This beats Chris's rap from this past episode.
Hey, at least like they made the cut. Stephen Fishback's poetry left on the cutting room floor of this game.
To be fair, he read someone else's poem, so I don't know if that counts. I don't count, you know, direct copy. They're not pulling Steven, you know, he basically did the equivalent of slipping into the bathroom, looking at someone else's poem, and then coming back and saying that it's his.
Fish.
Fair enough.
Fish. Yeah, and it's fish. I didn't even know that. I have to give this a snap too, just because for those of you that don't know what the context of this is on RuPaul's Drag Race, this might be one of my favorite things that I've heard in the past couple of months or so. I've become borderline obsessed with this. Yet another reason why I had to put it in here, so I'm going to give it a snap as well.
So this isn't going to make sense because Mike really is on the Drag Race podcast. We talked about this. Mike is just obsessed with these lyrics and it's absolutely fantastic.
Could you imagine BB Anderson actually saying these lyrics, talking to Pagongs of like, yeah, I'm pussy, bitch.
Yeah, that's actually what is his backup t-shirt that we didn't get to see. That's what it said. It was pictures of his family and then I'm pussy, bitch.
Talk about the time issues. from the future. And he was dead when she did it.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, at least I think Dominic would enjoy the "you can take my snatch" lyric, considering how much he enjoys doing power snatches to impress the other Navidis.
That's true. He is all about the power snatch.
Well, congrats. Thank you to all unintentional or inadvertent submissions here in the first ever edition of Snap or Crap. I'm glad we have looked through the annals of Survivor history and beyond in order to determine who has the best poem. And apparently it comes from B.B. Zahara Benet, according to Ali Lasher.
You're a winner, baby.
Poetry. Yes. okay. All right. So... So I guess I'll go ahead and ask my question for this week. So I was just thinking about the fact that Kellen, who had an opportunity to play the game on Ghost Island, then, you know, obviously turned that down, but it didn't carry over to Stephanie, which I thought it would. I thought that, you know, potentially if there was going to be an advantage, the producers would want that in play. So I guess my biggest question is, do we think that the advantage that Kellen would have gotten is lost? Do we think it's lost? Like, what do we think is going on with the sort of unplayed game on Ghost Island? So, you know, Allie, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I'm just super confused.
I'm going to take a second to think about this and punt to just bring up something Rob said on Know It Alls that I thought was really interesting, that potentially there should be bigger consequences to Kellen turning down a game and that it leaves the game open and available for Stephanie to come. I think that would have been very interesting and I don't know. Well done. I don't know how they would have worked that out. Like, if you tell Kellen, like, if you decline to play, like, this will be in play for whoever else. But I don't know. Presumably, like, I mean, they've been doing this for a long time. They plan for people to decline certain things. Depending on what the rest of the advantages are, presumably the later games are things that you would... I'm trying to think. I was like, Michelle's advantage when she won that last mini challenge and took Neil off the jury, but that wasn't a bad use of it. But, like, presumably the ones that go later are meant to be used later in the game, so I have a feeling they just took it out.
But see, like, I'm concerned. What if that was the effing stick? Like, I would be so sad if that never got to see the light of day.
So you feel like the game will not be used. And granted, we talked about this last week. I'm pretty sure it was just the same quote unquote game, which was here are two pieces of bamboo. Choose the right one.
And so they both have a key in it.
Yeah. So I don't know if exactly that one it was lost necessarily, but you're asking, like, is there now going to be an unused advantage? Will they not bring that back into the rotation?
Right. Yeah. I should clarify that if they won the game, right? So if Kellen had chosen to play and then had won, is that whatever advantage that might be, whether it be steal the vote, extra vote, idol, is that now just lost into the Ghost Island ether? Or, you know, what's going to happen with that? Because I'm telling you, if it's the effing stick, I'm going to be so sad.
I don't think it will be, considering that how much they hyped that one up, that and like Eric's immunity necklace and James's idols, I feel like were like the big three. We've already seen one of them. You'd have to feel like they wouldn't promote the heck out of it if it wasn't going to make some sort of appearance. And we also don't know. We've only seen one advantage on Ghost Island so far. So we have no idea. Maybe the effing stick could be buried at one of the beaches. Maybe that's the other one that, you know, got rehidden after Michael found the big ass square. So I do like this idea, though, that you brought up, Allie, about like this added idea of, oh, if you decline playing this game, then it means that the next person gets an opportunity to play it, because it adds more into this risk reward idea. You know, initially the risk was just you could lose your vote, which Kellen was the reason why she didn't take it. But now the additional risk is you could lose your vote. But if you don't take it, now there's a chance that someone on the other side, both from a try perspective and a numbers perspective, could get sent here and get a chance at an advantage.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that you also don't know for sure who's going to end up going to Ghost Island. So you really are leaving it up to chance. I mean, it could be you again, right? I mean, you don't know. It could be somebody who you're working against on the same tribe. It could be somebody on the other tribe, right? It really just sort of opens this door to like, crap, I need, you know, do I leave this open or do I need to shut this down?
There is also something that disadvantages the person who comes next. Like, unless you say like Kellen declined to play, so this is her game, like, or whatever, because if Stephanie comes back and it's like, oh, I got a parchment that said no game today, and Kellen's like, nope, I left you a game, you're a liar, you know, like there is something with like Kellen information asymmetry there that could also screw the next person.
Information asymmetry, come through, lawyer.
Yeah, which is what they want, though, because I feel like nowadays, especially when they keep pumping out this idea that information is power, which is something that Stephanie, to the point that she utilized, where apparently when she was voted out, she didn't tell anyone. She was thinking, like, maybe I'll tell Bradley and Kellen about the legacy advantage, but no, I decided to screw them and not tell them. You know, even to that point, mm-hmm. I feel like that could be another fun way to involve information, considering how thirsty they were for the information theme last season. I'm surprised that this could be another way to sort of, you know, bring it in here.
Yes, them and their concubines.
All those concubines.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I think it's going to be, you know, to see how Ghost Island 1 unfolds through the rest of the season, then if it's brought back, you know, because I think like what you guys are talking about, there's a lot of things that could be workshopped potentially moving forward to change it up, to make it a little bit less like Exile Island and a little bit more its own unique Ghost Island type of thing. But so if we don't have any more thoughts on that, let's get into our next segment. So we are bringing back the Mad Libs. So as we talked about earlier on this episode, there were a lot of, I want to call them sob stories, but it was everybody giving their own sort of, you know, this is my personal experience. This is what I've gone through. Survivor is going to play that piano music in the background, all two chords of it, just going back and forth. So what we're going to do is we're going to play Mad Libs. I've taken transcripts of both Stephanie and Donathan talking about their own personal experiences and turned it into Mad Libs. So first, we're going to start with Stephanie's story. So you guys are going to be giving me parts of speech, and then we're just going to see where this goes. So, Mike, we'll start with you. I need a noun.
Helmet.
Okay. Allie, another noun.
I'm actually, I don't know if you guys remember, you know, you asked me for one word. I'm obviously going to give you 500.
Yeah. Hope you're writing all this down, Leon.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Got it.
I don't know if you guys remember last time I was in the B&B, I talked about, my grandma and her various thoughts on the show mm-hmm. that were pretty, I don't know, somewhat salacious, but very funny. Anyway, I just got a call from her that I obviously didn't take, some on the podcast. So I'm just like, it's like she knows I'm here somehow. Anyway, so I'm going to say grandma.
Oh, do I need a story for my next word now? Do we need stories for this, for the entries for the stories?
I just wanted to remind you how funny my last trip here was, so that maybe I won't not be ever invited back based on this one.
You big Jeffed your question. We can't have you back. Okay, Mike, I need an adjective.
Plush.
Okay. Allie, a noun. And it can't be grandma. Enough with the grandma.
I said grandma one time. Also, I like that Liana did not like your suggestion of plush, Mike. You can tell. Okay.
I think my favorite part of this are the secret judgments that Liana throws towards our choice in words.
No judgment here. All love.
Shot glass. Oh, okay, she likes Mike, that one.
A verb. All love. Okay, Mike, a verb.
Slip.
Everybody say
oh, thank
love.
You.
Sorry, I was trying to. Yeah, that was my attempt. Okay, Allie, an adjective.
Greasy.
Okay. Mike, a verb, past tense.
Plucked.
Okay. Allie, I need an urban legend.
What?
I had a really specific answer for this and I didn't want to do it, so I just decided to go for it. So any type of urban legend.
What?
Like
no, like the Loch Ness Monster? Like, is that an urban legend?
Yeah. That would be acceptable.
All right. I'll go with that.
Okay. Okay. Mike, I need a verb ending in E.
But that's different from verb in past tense. Well, all right. Held. Nope, that doesn't end anything. Why they broke the run rule? let's see. Fanned.
Okay. Okay, Allie, I need a number.
6.
Okay. Okay, Mike, I need a noun.
Foot.
Man, this must be so exciting for podcast listeners. Okay, Allie, I need another noun.
Rabbi.
Okay. Okay. Mike, I need a noun. It's very noun heavy.
So many nouns. Give me ladle.
Okay. Yes. People. What is it?
Person, place, or thing?
Person, place, or things. Yes. Okay. All right. Allie, I need two more nouns.
See, I'm just thinking of Jewish things now, because when you said urban legend, I was thinking nice Jewish boy. But two more nouns.
Put that down.
I take offense to that.
Q-tip.
Okay.
And lima bean.
Okay. And Mike, I need one more noun.
Noun central here. Basket.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so this is Stephanie's story that she told on Survivor, if it was written by us. Okay. When I have moments when I have to be brave, I can show my helmet and the grandma that I can do everything plush. Those are the moments when I take a deep shot glass and slip in the strength I do have, because I've felt greasy before in life. And that's why I plucked the Loch Ness Monster religion and got fanned all in the span of 6 months. That actually worked out. Okay. That's when I realized my true inner foot. And I believe in Rabbi, regardless of if anybody else does. And that is the true foot in life. Now, as a single ladle, I only have myself to rely on. And I want to channel that inner foot, because I'm ready to go back out there and kick some Q-tip ass with a clear basket and a clear lima bean.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, do you think Mormon is an urban legend, or is that...
No. Okay, so I was even thinking, I was like, God, is this offensive? Like, can I do this? But I really wanted it to be like the Chupacabra religion. Like, that was the joke I had in my head, and I couldn't get rid of it. And I was like, oh, I just want to get, like, let me just spoon feed you something.
No, but now instead, Stephanie Johnson led the bunch of Nessie heads to go find her inner foot. I think inner foot actually really works, considering how much of a runner she is.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That actually worked out. Yeah, all that grainy footage of the Loch Ness Monster apparently didn't keep her in the fold. But yes, because she was talking about her inner strength, and she kept saying, that's true strength, my inner strength. So, her inner foot, it's true foot.
All she wanted to do was impress grandma.
Poor grandma.
P.S.
She can show her helmet and grandma.
I just read the transcript of the voicemail my grandma left me about... she's having trouble with Netflix. She wants to fix it. But the first thing she says is, why aren't you available to take my call?
How dare you? That's next time we'll just allow you to take your call on the B&B, and we'll just get to listen.
And we'll pull nouns from your conversation and put them into the blanks.
Netflix, right. Help, remote, no batteries.
Yes. When I have moments when I have to be brave, I can show my Netflix and the remote that I can do everything.
I do love that she slipped into her shot glass. Is that what she said?
Deep shot glass. Those are the moments. Yeah, when I take a deep shot glass and slip into the strength I do have.
I mean, don't we all want our moments of trial?
At the beginning of this sounds like the I could do everything good YouTube girl. Do you know that?
I totally see that. I can totally see that. Moments where I take a deep shot glass. That's great. Okay. So that was a bit of a long one. We have one more prepared. This is Donathan from his story that he gave. So Allie, I'll start with you. I need a noun.
All right. I'm going to do Kentucky themed in honor of Donathan. So I'm going to say racehorse.
Okay. Mike, I need a verb.
Trample.
Okay. Allie, I need a number.
I was worried that when I said I'm going to do Kentucky theme and started with race, people thought I was going to say like racist or something. you need a number. 35.
Okay. Mike, I need a noun.
Horseshoe. No, let's not do that one. Let's not make it this horse theme. Let's not make this equine. go with net.
Okay. Okay. I need a plural noun, Allie.
Mosquitoes.
Perfect. Little Big Jeff tie-in.
Are you comfortable with the relationship you currently have with mosquitoes?
Whoa, Jeff's back. Oh my God.
Oh my God, so great to have you on the B&B. Thank you for coming.
It sounds pretty good to me. Like, I'm not going to lie to you.
It's pretty good.
I mean, we should have B&B, Bloom and Boris and Big Jeff. I think we should take on a new third co-host.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay. While we're thinking about how we would execute that, Mike, I need a body part.
Oh boy. Let's go with fingernail.
Yes. Okay. Allie, I need an adjective.
Gumpy.
Your boy. Okay. Mike, I need a famous person.
Oh, Justin Bieber.
Okay. Allie, I need a noun.
Toothpaste.
Okay. Mike, a verb.
Hugged. It can be present tense.
Only hugged. Okay, and then lastly, Allie, I need an adjective.
So you don't want dead air while I think way too hard about this.
adjective is dead air. dead air.
deadly.
Ooh.
Okay.
Real Kentucky themed. I really stayed with it the whole time.
Yeah, you really did. Let's
toothpaste, deadly.
Racehorse.
Start them all with racehorse.
This is how mosquitoes. Much I know about Kentucky.
Yeah, and deadly. Ending with deadly.
Yeah, I can't wait until I cover Top Chef Kentucky and we have the toothpaste quickfire challenge. It's going to be great.
Okay. All right. So this is Donovan's story written by us. So. That racehorse and stuff really trampled home today. That's like home for me. I actually take care of my net. She just had 35 mosquitoes. And I just had that on my fingernails today. I just feel kind of gumpy sometimes being here. Just because I know it's more on Justin Bieber. I'm not a toothpaste drinker, but just knowing that that's what they hug, having that little bit of home, it's just been real deadly. Can you be a toothpaste drinker and then take a deep shot glass of your toothpaste?
I don't know. It's going to be very slow going in the tub because toothpaste is not exactly that viscous or very viscous, I should say.
That's right. just feeling kind of gumpy. Poor Donovan. That is when Paul shows up.
I mean, I don't know if the kids are doing the Tide Pod challenge. Maybe they are taking like shots of Crest. Mm. I don't know. But I also like how he, what do you say about Justin Bieber? That it's like it sticks close to Justin Bieber or something.
I know because it's just more on Justin Bieber because he's not a toothpaste drinker.
Or he's a moron.
I believe it's Mormon.
Oh, the urban legend of Mormon Justin Bieber. Yes.
Come through, Loch Ness Monster. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, was
congratulations on Grandma from Grandma, Donathan's grandma, for having 35 mosquitoes. That must be very tough to do. Tough to manage.
That's right. Can you imagine, especially if you're allergic, like those, that just, you know, that wells up.
I'm sorry that you'll
Uh-oh, we've lost Allie. Who's our medic? Who's the B&B medic?
It's gotta be Troyzan. He's all in one.
No, Tarzan should really be your medic.
Yeah, he's the doctor, right?
You have to tell me what's wrong with you, but you have to rhyme.
Yes, you must listen to a poem first before he gives you the prognosis. Sorry.
It could be cancer if you're a dancer.
That's so stupid. Oh, I love it. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Oh my god. Well, we learned so much through these Mad Libs.
Yes, they've been real deadly.
Real deadly. We've thrown a wide net, much like the one that reminds Donathan of home. I'll ask my question here. There was a very interesting op-ed that the aforementioned Dalton Ross wrote this week, where he essentially asked, should Survivor limit the number of times contestants can play? And I thought this was a super pertinent question because we have someone on the podcast, in Allie, who covers a show where essentially like the running theme of the show now are these rivalries and these bonds that have come over from previous seasons. And it consistently functions off of people coming back again and again and again. So I would love to hear both of your thoughts. should Survivor set a limit in terms of how many times contestants to play? Whether it means an actual number, whether it means like, okay, you can only play twice in 2 years, and then you have to wait a certain amount of time. I would love to hear from you both about it.
Yeah, I think for me, what really stood out was Dalton's suggestion about just spreading it out. Because I think that, like, I actually don't have a problem with people being brought back, but just when there's so many people back to back to back to back, right? I mean, because I think he uses Russell Hance's example of coming back so frequently, whereas Sandra Diaz-Twine, her three appearances were spread out over 28 seasons, and it feels, you know, less intense than Russell Hance's. So I think, I mean, it's hard because I don't think you necessarily have to set a hard and fast rule about it. But I definitely get the sentiment of, you know, not wanting to sort of overload with a certain personality.
Mm-hmm. Allie, what are you thinking?
I have a trouble with the premise in general, as though Survivor doesn't limit this. Like, they make it seem like it's like random draw. Like, there's casting. Like, casting decides who comes back. You don't need to institute rules. Anyway, okay. We can talk about that later. So I think a key difference between why this works for the challenge and probably wouldn't work as well for Survivor in terms of constantly having returning seasons with people who have been on for 15 years is because in Survivor, it's a pure voting someone out, at least in the tribe setting of pre-merge. In the challenge, you can put someone up for elimination, but they can always be in control of their fate if they go home. Like, you can't just vote someone out. So the pre-gaming stuff, like, definitely happens in the challenge, and ties run deep, and there are friends who won't cross each other. But at the end of the day, like, you still have a chance to save yourself. I think something else that the challenge struggles with because of this is something I just totally forgot. It depends on how you cast it, right? Like, Survivor, I guess, could make it work. But the new people the challenge introduces, we used to see, like, you have to go home, rookies go in, earn your stripes, all of this nonsense. And you never really had a chance until you were on your second or third season to really play the game. Now we see them bringing in a lot of new people to the point where the new people are more sort of like dominant in the numbers than the older people. So we're actually like seeing people have to play, whereas we went through a couple of seasons where it was just pagonging after pagonging after pagonging, which is like not so great. I'm happy with the way that Survivor works, and I like kind of trust casting. I love all return new player seasons. The only thing I'm not really a fan of is when you have like a mix. Like, I would rather either all returning or all new. If we want to institute a rule, let's do away with like the mixed seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because like I kind of want to. I like what Liana's saying about like the waiting period. I would say like the cool down period when it comes to returning player seasons, just because I like if I see people come back, I like seeing them at different parts of their life. Like Kibi Kappenberg, for example, we saw her back in Survivor 2 and she was, you know, a bit very outspoken, a little bit of a wild child. And then flash forward to season 31, she has two kids, you know, she's a more responsible person now and she treats the game completely differently. I mean, even watching Rom Mariano's four seasons of Survivor is like night and day coming from this, you know, Boston construction kid who runs his mouth to like, here's the father of probably two at that point, who is like completely dominating an alliance and like breaking down in tears when he wins the final immunity challenge. It's so interesting to sort of watch that arc happen, which, Ali, as you talked about, I think is sort of a big plus in the challenge, is that you really get these sort of overarching arcs that, you know, span multiple seasons. So I would kind of like to see, I think that's a good benefit of bringing people back in different parts of their life, just because they almost come back as different people. I think one of the problems with bringing back Russell Hance, for example, for 19, 20, and 22 is that we're seeing essentially the same person three times in a row. If Russell, I mean, not to say that Russell's changed that much since then, but like if he came back now after being on 20, I feel like he'd take things a different way than he would if he was just begging them out all at once.
Yeah, so this is a little bit tangential, but Allie, what do you think about the fact that the challenge does sort of rely on bringing back returning players, whereas Survivor definitely doesn't. I mean, you can have a newbie season and it's still, you know, as exciting, if not more exciting than returning player season, where I feel like the challenge sort of relies on, you know, those overarching stories like we were talking about. You know, what if the challenge didn't do that? You know, does that then hurt the challenge ultimately?
Yeah, I think it led to sort of like a downturn right before the last few seasons, where there was this big transition period where they kind of lost a lot of their key players who moved on to do different things all at once. And like, that's a big risk where you like have to bring in new people when the viewers are used to seeing like the evolution, and they don't want like 15 new people dumped on you at once. And like, that's just not what the viewers are used to. That said, I also think it changes the way people play. Like, to me, Kellen on Ghost Island, if she was playing to return and not playing to win, there's no way she gives up the airtime of possibly getting an advantage. And I think that if you reduce the chance of coming back, well, maybe you get better gameplay. What's great about the challenge is you get a lot more entertainment, because these people know that their checks are only going to get cashed if they're performing. They're only going to get invited back if they're maybe making stupid moves, picking fights, you know, or like they're training so they can compete well, so they can stay. Like, I do think that that motivates people to make at least better TV, if not better game moves.
That's interesting, sort of from the like entertainment perspective of a, or versus the I'm really trying to win because I feel like this is my only shot, like type mentality.
Right.
Yeah. Though I feel like, I don't know, maybe with the, you know, recurrence of returning player seasons, I mean, we just had 2 in 4 seasons. I know that it seems like we're now in a cool down period. We talked about that last season, but I do wonder if there is still a little bit of a mentality of modern Survivor players too, of like, I mean, Bradley was someone who coming in said like, hey, you know, I want to make good TV no matter what happens. And let's be clear, love or hate Bradley, he's making for fantastic TV so far. But I do wonder if there is, especially when you cast a lot of fans for the show, I do wonder if, since they're seeing, you know, the televised product, which is really being built around a lot of spectacle, if they're sort of coming in with that mentality of like, hey, if I'm not going to win, let me, you know, play my heart out so that if I want to play again, now I'll sort of have a resume. It's weird. It's like almost built, there's a resume to win, there's a resume to come back almost.
Isn't that what Alex said in BB19? She was like, she was going to just try to get invited back. She was going to play the
game. Yeah, I don't know. Jeff,
like
Jeff, do you remember when Alex said that?
I don't recall. I can only do it. First of all, it's a terrible impression, but I can only do my terrible impression when it's something I know he said.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay, well, I'll be sure to ask you about eggs later. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I do think that there's no, you know, hard and fast rule, but I know that's more on Justin Bieber, so I don't really want to get involved there.
Yeah, it's Mormon Justin Bieber, only a certain number of wives for him. All right, let's move on to the last segment of each and every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. Last week's question of the week, in response to Kellen saying her biggest Survivor fear was going to Ghost Island by herself, we asked, what is your biggest Survivor fear? As per usual, we'll read some answers that you all sent in and we'll go around the panel and give our own answers. First, starting with Tom Coleman, my darkest Survivor fear, I'm the sole newbie on an all-star season starring only the cast of Thailand. One night while being Ted's little spoon, I learned the island is also inhabited by the cast of Big Brother 9 due to a lack of an extradition treaty. So, I mean, Allie, you talked about how much you didn't want to mix new players in. I guess it's like double jeopardy if you're mixing in the cast of Big Brother 9 with the cast of Survivor Thailand.
Look, I shouldn't complain because we've had a lot of cast mixing this season on the challenge and people love it. So maybe it'll work. There's hope.
That sounds very terrifying. Does that big dummy that they had to make for that those challenges, is that going to be there also? Because I will only watch that season if that dummy is there.
Oh yeah, Chewy Gal better be there. That's like, yeah, that was like the 9th member of their tribe. Love Perfect. Me some Chewy Gal. We got the same answer pretty much from Justine Cassada and Dan Sinensky. Again, actually very nicely tied into what Ali said before. Their biggest Survivor fear would essentially be on a fans tribe in a fans versus favorite season.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Totally makes sense. Yeah, you're like up to get crushed. I get it.
And like sometimes in like fans versus favorites 1, they got like the Malolo side of things. Like they got the worst beach, you know, mm-hmm. the... they got the Fans versus Favorites 2. They got Shamar, who had his problems with sand or dirt in his eye. So, yeah, a lot of bad factors getting thrown the fans' way, unfortunately. Gregory McBean says, my greatest survivor fear is Shane Powers. That's all.
Dang. That is all. Shane Powers, complete with Blackberry, like wood Blackberry, murdering you in your shitty apartment.
Is the greater fear Shane Powers or Shane Powers pointing to a picture of you and saying that they're your least you're their least favorite person ever, like what he did with Bradley last week?
That is 1,000% more terrifying.
I don't like Liana Boris.
I'm sorry, Mr. Powers.
Gotta smoke. All right, let's move on. Parker Schimler says, biggest survivor fear, Tony version 500. I like that we're now getting into, like, Tony is an iOS system, and he's like, we're waiting for, like, the 500 software release, and he'll be truly the scariest one.
Right, well, we skipped 9, so then we went straight to 10, and then, you know, it's all the way up to 500. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? I just have this weird mental image of some sort of, like, RoboCop mixed with Tony, like...
No, RoboConstruction worker!
Yes, the Robo... I'm sorry, Tony, I didn't mean to blow up your spot. It's definitely RoboConstruction worker 500.
Listen, I lied to you. I'm not a RoboConstruction worker. I'm a RoboCop.
As in Sarah version, like only 3 probably at that point, knowing her archetype. Yes, and what is he building at that point, right? Because we've passed by shacks, we've passed by bunkers. Like, what is the next? This is like, oh crap, who's that famous architecture or guy?
Art Vandelay?
Never mind. Joke is past. Not important.
Frank
anyway,
Gehry.
Yes, that's hilarious. Yes, yes. This is a Frank Gehry house. Like, that's what he's building at this point.
No, it's artificial spy technology. I call it a spy. All right. John Tinkham says, my biggest survivor fear would be not having the will to compete in any challenge where Jeff Probst doesn't begin it by uttering the phrase, get it on.
Oh my gosh, the show that we've talked about before, Mike. Oh my god, why is my brain failing me in this last minute?
It's contagious for me.
Most Extreme Elimination Challenge.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that
Gila Douche?
Yes.
Oh man, yeah, I can understand though, because maybe Jeff feels like he needs to say it to like pump them up. Like, you guys look like you're like, let me give you a motivational speech. And no, it won't be a poem, but just 3 little words for you. Get it on.
Well, only if he tells me if it's worth playing for, because otherwise I have no idea if it's worth playing for. Like, thank you, Jeff, for clarifying that for me.
Let's move on. Steven Scott says, my biggest survivor fear would be having to eat rice. I'd rather eat balut. Steven Scott coming in with the anti-rice stance. Very, very hot take from Steven.
The anti-rice stance. Yes. That's classic. We should have worked that into one of our sob stories. And then yesterday I had to eat rice. It was just as bad because I'm not a toothpaste or a rice drinker.
You'd have to shoot the rice back in a deep shot glass. I don't know. I mean, look, I'm no one to complain about picky eating, but I would much rather want to eat rice than balut any day of the week.
5 chili peppers.
Ghost peppers. On Ghost Island.
There we go. The great Shannon Gates says, my survivor fear is literally exactly what happened to Jacob Derwin. Allie, does this hit close to home for you?
Too soon, honestly.
Aw, that's so sad.
When is the cool down period for when we can mention Jacob's fate?
I don't know. I almost wish I was on the B&B for the first episode to talk about that, because that was one of the worst displays of survivor plague I've ever seen in my entire life. And I truly do feel responsible because everybody I ever root for goes home. So I personally apologize for that outcome.
Man, what is it? What is it about like these shows nowadays between like you and, you know, Melissa with her picks on the LFC roundtables on Big Brother? Like, you keep cursing people and sending them home.
I feel like Kurt Clark should be brought into this conversation, too, if we're talking about curses. But I'm bad luck. Sorry for Michigan. This will air after Michigan plays tonight in the Elite Eight. But I feel like their time has come because I'll be rooting for them.
It's too late. You're cursed. And obviously, we don't know how to reverse the curse. So,
I know. Once we figure out how to reverse James's idol, I think we can figure out how to reverse Allie's bad luck.
That's right. It's a work in progress.
Keep me posted.
Finally, Trent C. says, my survivor fear is that production didn't clear the island, and one night, hungry pygmy cannibals capture and tie me up. They threaten to eat my butt, and I escape, writing a book about the incident years later. And I'm assuming Trent wrote a big poem after this, but it just, I didn't pull it.
Oh, I was going to say, I think Trent actually did a Mad Libs style for this, because it's threatened to eat my body part, butt, and I escape, like, verb, writing. It makes sense.
I like this idea, though, that, like, the survivor clears that, like, everybody get off, we're going to use the island for a few weeks.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, okay, it's time for the hungry pygmies to be let back on the island. Like, everybody get out. This is the one time the Fijian jungle needs to be clear of humans.
I guess it's like when they're using, like, a street to film a movie, and they're like, yeah, you like you have to let's go stay in a hotel for the week. It's like, that. Do they put the cannibals up somewhere?
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, let's go around the panel here. Allie, what is your biggest survivor fear?
Yeah, so this is interesting, and the only two things I could think of were, like, pretty much the same and just shows, like, why I should never be on Survivor. Like, I have no desire to ever be on reality television. I'm not, like, podcasting with an aspiration of being cast on any show. And it's because my biggest Survivor fear is basically being edited to be like Bradley, or to, like, be this villainous monster that I know I would be if I was hungry. I mean, I get hangry like for 3 hours and I'm a nightmare to deal with. So I can't imagine myself on the island. And I would be really, really afraid of, like, being someone who, like, fans call their employers, like, lose their job. So basically my survivor fear is nothing to do with Survivor. It's just for being exposed for the monster I am and facing economic and social repercussions in the real world because of it.
The Loch Ness Monster.
Potentially.
I thought when you were going to say Bradley, you were going to say dirt. My biggest fear is dirt.
So we shall say the tale of the Loch Ness Monster. See if it comes to fruition. Yeah.
That's perfect. So for my answer to the question of the week, obviously the first thing that popped in my head was Dan Foley. But as I got thinking about it more, you know what I was actually kind of terrified by? And I think maybe it's just because I was younger when I watched it and I was terrified by this movie, was the Blair Witch Project Challenge.
Oh, God.
Borneo.
Well, you're probably terrified of that, like, that horrible angle facing upwards, yeah. Right? That's not flattering to anyone.
I don't know. I was terrified by the movie and then the fact that they did it on the show. And yeah, it was that terrible angle. And it's really funny because going back and looking at it and just thinking objectively, like, Rudy, his answers of I don't know every second is just so funny. It really should be something that's silly, but still kind of inside it terrifies me just based on my childhood experiences. So I'm going to go with the Blair Witch Project Challenge from Borneo.
Oh, boy. Throwing it back to Bibi Zahara-Benet's original season.
Right.
I'm going to go with, so I've talked about this on another Survivor podcast, but I have a fear of open water. I do not know how to swim. So I mean, my worst survivor fear would be any sort of endurance challenge that takes place in the ocean, whether it's just treading water. I think probably the most anxious I've ever been watching Survivor were the three times they've done the last gasp immunity challenge, where they're under the grate and the tide just slowly rises and they have to try to, you know, keep their heads above water.
So not having your hair said that it's smelling like a dead weasel, that's not your top fear?
No, I'm always rocking dead weasel.
Right, yes.
That's me on a good day. So speaking towards the dead weasel, question of the week for next week. In your opinion, what is the optimal survivor hairstyle? We have Seabass and Jenna talking about braiding hair. Seabass doesn't want to have one long dread. But from a gameplay perspective, from a survival perspective, what do you think is the optimal hairstyle to rock over the course of your hopeful 39 days in Survivor?
Can I say something about this since I won't be here next week?
Absolutely.
So this is not necessarily the answer, but I had a friend in middle school or in elementary school, and we used to, like, play Survivor on the playground, and we were, like, really big Survivor fans, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, she has really, really curly, curly hair. And she always said that if she had auditioned for Survivor and got on, she would just shave her head. And, like, that would be her audition video, is either, like, shaving her head or saying, like, I will shave my head to go on the show. And I was like, are you serious? That's crazy. Whatever. And she's like, you think I'm going to be able to deal with this for 39 days? Like, no way. I just shave my head. It'll grow back. So think about it. That's a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, practically that makes sense. Like, I can totally see that. I don't know. Did she get that answer when she snuck into the bathroom? And it was like, what would you do in Survivor with your hair?
I mean, it's like that. Talk about playing to win or playing to return. Like, if you're going to show, you're going to be cast for being like, a, like, you know, your appearance or whatever. And then you just show up with like a roughly shaved head. Like, you know, you did it yourself in the bathroom, whatever. And, you know, you're probably not going to get invited back, but you might win because you don't have to deal with your hair.
Yeah, plus less resistance when you're swimming, right?
I don't know, though, because, you know, people bond over braiding hair. I mean, we saw that with Jenna and Sebastian might have arguably kept Jenna there. So if you can't have someone braid your hair, how are you going to make those bonds?
Oh, yeah, that's what kept Jenna and Sebastian together, the hair braiding.
That's right. Well, Sebastian definitely doesn't want one big single dread. He wants, you know, he wants the braids. He needs the braiders.
Well, we'll be sure to talk about our own opinions about optimal Survivor hairstyles next week. So a bit of an announcement about that. Next weekend is a holiday weekend, so schedules are all a flutter. So unfortunately, Liana will not be able to join us next week on the B&B. And neither will Paul Osselson, but we decided to make a true holiday weekend a two-for-one special here on the B&B. For the first time in history, we're going to have not one, but two guests on the B&B. It's going to be myself and the lovely ladies of the Bachelor Wrap-Up here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. Amy and Haley Strong are going to be coming to the B&B to get into some egg-finding shenanigans to recap episode 6. It should be a fun time. But if you want to let us know your answer to the question of the week, as well as any sort of feedback you may have about the B&B, you can always tweet this to us. Use hashtag RHAPBNB, the letter B, the letter N, the letter B. You can always respond to the post on the RHAP patron group, respond to the thread on RobHasAWebsite.com. Bunch of ways to let us know what your optimal Survivor hairstyle is, as we'll answer this next week with Amy and Haley. Allie, thank you so, so much, and for bringing Big Jeff on as well, but for going through all the poetry with us, filling out some Mad Libs, you know, ignoring your grandmother's phone calls. We really covered it all here.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys do a really good job. It's a lot of fun. Always a treat to check in here. And I'll be leaving a great note for Haley and Amy in the guest book.
Also, send your grandma our apologies for keeping you from answering your phone.
That's immediately I'm going to do after hanging up on this.
Perfect. So how can people follow you on social media? And surprisingly, after what, 9 straight months of coverage, your challenge coverage is going to take a temporary hiatus in a couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, don't follow me. It's not much better than what you heard today from me. No, you can follow me at Lash Tweets and keep an eye out. We cover the challenge. I cover the challenge with Brian Cohen at robinswebsite.com/challenge iTunes if you want to check that out. Matt Liguori and I are tinkering around with doing something on the network for Jersey Shore starting in April. So I'll be around. You're not getting rid of me that easily.
Absolutely not. Nor will we want to. And actually, with Liana out for the entire weekend, she'll be out for the Drag Race podcast for season 10 next weekend as well. So if you want to hear, Ali Lasher will make her much anticipated return to the Drag Race podcast, give her thoughts on season 10 so far.
The library is open.
Yes, come through, Ali. I'm so happy you're going to be filling in for me.
Woo-hoo. I'm disappointed you won't be there, but I'm excited to be able to talk Drag Race.
Tell your grandma I say hi.
I will tell Brent I said hi. You said hi.
Yeah.
See, the library is already open. The shade has come flowing out even a week early. Liana, how can people follow you on social media, and how have Liana Saturdays and the Drag Race podcast been going?
Yes, so you can find me on social media. I'm at Liana Boras, LianaBoras. And Big Brother Canada has been so much fun so far this season. I'm doing the Saturday morning updates, which are a blast. And then, of course, covering Drag Race with Ali's grandma, Brent, and Mike, which we just had the premiere of season 10, which was so much fun. And I'm really excited to talk about this season. And it really is going to be an amazing time.
Yeah, no spoilers, but I think we all supremely enjoyed season 10. I would encourage anyone out there, don't let the random spit of Drag Race lyrics that I put in the middle of the segment deter you away too much if you're scared to broach those waters. You can always follow me at
Bon.
Always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Check out the exit interviews that I do for Parade. As I mentioned, I got to talk with Stephanie Johnson this past week. Really enjoy getting to speak with her, not only about her time on Survivor, but a really big personal epiphany that she had on Ghost Island that she carried with her back to her family. I cover SNL on a podcast called SNL Funhouse. I appear here and there on a bunch of random other stuff. So I plug everything on my social media, so be sure to check it out there. But that's going to do it for this week on the B&B. Allie, thank you so, so much for coming on. This was so much fun. Let us know your thoughts about any games you want us to play. If you have any long-form suggestions, you can email them to us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. Special shout-out to Allie Giancola. Thank you so much for suggesting the Brendan Bradley middle school game that we alluded to at the beginning of this podcast last week. We'll talk next week. I'll be back with Amy and Haley. Just so you know, due to the holiday, it'll come out a little later than usual. Usually we record these on Saturday or Sunday during the day. That one might be out Sunday night or Monday night instead. Just a heads up, but it will be out there. But until then, we'll check you out at your next day.
Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.